Welcome to the Razors Inc. podcast with your host, Jonathan Farini. Migrant workers, displaced and looking for work, living in squalid conditions, performing back-breaking work all day, just hoping for a better life. This isn't a statement about America today, although it certainly could be, but rather, America nearly 100 years ago. So pour yourself a drink, pull up a chair, and hear Jonathan's take on movies, television, and today, a look back at a seminal book and subsequent movie that echoes even now. Here's your host, Jonathan Farini.
A maxim of this podcast running repeatedly through my episodes is, what's old is new again inside film. Firestorms, floods, chemical spills, earthquakes, the cost of living, taxes, regulation, international migration, and much more have put Americans on the road seeking a better life, just like the Jode family, inside the novel and screen adaptation of the 1940 film The Grapes of Wrath, written by John Steinbeck, winning the Pulitzer Prize in 1939. John Ford directed the film, won the Oscar for Best Director. The screen adaptation was by Nunnally Johnson, a 20th Century Fox release. The film is one of the first selected to be included within the National Film Registry. The themes inside this timeless movie are eerily prescient, and I contend remain woven into the American experience, and will be repeated time and again. The film is only one generation old. The movie follows the book except for the ending, which portrays a more optimistic outcome for the Jode family than the book. It's a must-read for all of us because those who don't know their history are condemned to repeat it. I'm a member of the Boomer generation, which means I had parents who lived through the Great Depression, lasting from 1929 to 39. My father spoke about the commencement address in 1932 at his high school, where the principal stood behind the podium and only said, "I don't know what to tell you all, but there isn't any hope." I grew up within the suburbs outside of Los Angeles, and many of my friends were the children or grandchildren of those estimated 300,000 migrants escaping the Dust Bowl, flocking to California in search of a better life by picking fruit during the Depression. The Dust Bowl was created by a drought, horrendous winds, and farming practices which destroyed the vegetation holding the agricultural soil together. The fertile topsoil was blown away by the winds along with the lives of the farmers. These displaced farmers were largely from Oklahoma and Arkansas and were called Okies and Arkies, derogatory terms placed upon them for their illiterate or unsophisticated ways as they made their trek towards California. They were economic refugees. These people endured the culmination of the Great Depression and moved on with their lives, becoming the great middle class of and fueling the economic engine of Southern California. The parents of my friends were modest people and the type of people who'd give you the shirt off their backs. I recall being invited many a holiday to enjoy a dinner inside a modest kitchen with a table or perhaps a small dining room. Let's explore three themes running through the film. The first theme is the resilience of family. And in the case of the Jodes, it was Ma Jode, played brilliantly by Jane Darwell.
Sometimes they do something to you. They hurt you and you get mad and then you get mean. And they hurt you again and you get meaner and meaner. Till you ain't no boy nor man anymore, just a walking chunk of mean mad.
She won the Oscar for Best Supporting Actress. She was a large woman physically, but came with a big heart. It was her backbone in the face of adversity which kept the family together. She is born from the stock of pioneer women crossing the country in covered wagons and raising families under treacherous conditions. If you want to add a face to Mount Rushmore, make it a face of a pioneer woman. The raging dust storms had removed the fertile topsoil farms, rendering farming impossible and making mortgages past due. The book and movie invoked the good guys versus the bad found inside Western films, except the good guys wore overalls and the bad guys wore suits with hats and smoking cigars. The bad guys were representatives of the banks sent out to foreclose on the farms. Not much legal procedure here, folks. More like be out in 2 weeks or else. After foreclosure, the cats, referring to a brand of earth-moving machinery, would come and raise the farmhouse and everything else standing, leaving nothing but dirt. The good guys were hapless farm people and asking, why and how can the banks do this to them?
Why, one man on a tractor can handle 12 or 14 of these places. You just pay him a wage and take all the crop.
Yeah, but we couldn't do one any less than what our share is now. Well, the children ain't getting enough to eat as it is, and they're so ragged. We'd be ashamed if everybody else's children wasn't the same way.
I can't help that. All I know is I got my orders. They told me to tell you to get off, and that's what I'm telling you.
You mean get off my own land?
Now, don't go to blaming me. It ain't my fault.
Whose fault is it?
You know who owns the land, the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company.
And who's the Shawnee Land and Cattle Company?
It ain't nobody. It's a company.
They got a president, ain't they? They got somebody who knows what a shotgun's for, ain't they?
Oh, son, it ain't his fault because the bank tells him what to do.
All right. Where's the bank?
Tulsa. What's the use of picking on him? He ain't nothing but the manager. And he's half crazy himself trying to keep up with his orders from the east.
Then who do we shoot?
Brother, I don't know. If I did, I'd tell you.
I ask myself, why foreclose on the farms when they're not viable? I contend the film missed an opportunity to add dramatic, draconian depth to the bad guys with a simple line such as, the big bosses believe the dust storms will eventually cease, and the government will fix the depression, and all these thousands of acres of foreclosed farms will be sold to combines. Take a look at who and what owns most of the farmland with the United States, and you'll know what I mean by combine. We're introduced to a very young Henry Fonda playing the son of the Jode family, paroled after a 4-year prison sentence for murder, named Tom Jode.
One farm?
This is a couple of miles. I'd have walked her if my dogs wasn't pooped out.
Looking for a job?
No, my old man's got a place. 40 acres. He's a sharecropper, but we've been there a long while.
Oh. Been doing the job?
Yeah.
I seen your hands. You've been swinging a pick or a sledge. That's what makes them shiny. I notice little things like that all the time. Got a trade?
Why don't you get at it, buddy?
Get at what?
You know what I'm talking about. You've been going over me ever since I got in. Why don't you ask me where I've been?
Well, I don't stick my nose in nobody's business.
Not much.
Well, I stay in my own yard.
That big nose of yours been going over me like a sheep in a vegetable patch. Well, I ain't keeping it a secret. I've been in the penitentiary. Been there 4 years. Anything else you want to know?
Well, you ain't got to get sore.
Go ahead, ask me anything.
I didn't mean nothing.
Me neither. I'm just trying to get along without shoving anybody, that's all.
This isn't the Fonda from 12 Angry Men or Failsafe. It's a young, edgy, and I contend still developing his acting chops, Fonda. On his way home to the family farm from prison, he meets up with an old friend, a former clergyman, played aptly by John Carradine, named Jim Casey, who explains the financial and emotional carnage which has befallen the people.
Howdy, friend. Howdy. Say, ain't you young Tom Jode, old Tom's boy?
Yeah, I'm on my way home now.
Well, I do declare. I baptize you, son. Ain't you the preacher?
Used to be.
Not no more. I lost the call. But boy, I sure used to have it. Well, I used to get an irrigation ditch so squirming full of repentant sinners, I'd pretty near drown half of them. But not no more. I lost the spirit. I got nothing to preach about no more, that's all.
The Jodes, like their neighbors and thousands of others leaving for California, load all of their family belongings into a rig resembling the Clampett's jalopy from the Beverly Hillbillies. They head for California via famous Route 66, which connected Chicago with California. No freeways, no airports, folks. It was a long ride through Texas, New Mexico, Arizona, and into the desert of California. Imagine a flat tire or overheated radiator. Who would you call? The AAA? It wasn't enough they cooked clean and were susceptible to the highwaymen. These were thieves who'd set up barricades along lonely roads to rob, rape, and plunder weary travelers. If I were forming a band with legendary musical acts, I would have avoided naming the group after these wretched thieves, just saying. Ma Jode has asked, aren't you going to take a last look at the farm?
Give the old place a last look?
We're going to California, ain't we? All right then, let's go to California.
But that don't sound like your ma. You never was like that before.
I never had my house pushed over before. Never had my family stuck out in the road. Never had to lose everything I had in life.
Matriarchy reigns supreme in holding the family together, just as it did, I suspect, with the covered wagons. The second theme is the kindness of the American people they encounter along the way. Although hordes of economic refugees heading to California are looked upon with skepticism and not welcome, remember the slurs, Okies and Arkies? Pa Jode, played by Russell Simpson, enters a coffee shop and asks to purchase a loaf of bread for 10 cents.
Sandwich. We got nice sandwiches.
Well, I sure would like to do that, ma'am. But the fact is, we ain't got but a dime for it. It's all figured out. I mean, for the trip.
You can't buy no loaf of bread for a dime. We only got 15-cent loaves.
Give them the bread.
We'll run out before the bread truck comes.
All right, then we run out.
This here's a 15-cent loaf.
Well, would you... Could you see your way to cutting off 10 cents worth?
Give them the loaf.
No, sir. We want to buy 10 cents worth, that's all.
Go on, it's yesterday's bread.
Go ahead. Bert says to take it.
Well, it may sound funny being so tight, but we got 1,000 miles to go, and we don't know if we'll make it. Is them penny candies, ma'am?
Which ones?
There, them stripy ones.
Oh, them? Well, no. Them's two for a penny.
Give us two then, ma'am. Go on, take them, take them. Thank you, ma'am.
Them ain't two for a cent candy.
What's it to you?
Them's a nickel apiece candy.
We better get going. We're dropping time.
Now, so long.
Hey, wait a minute. You got change coming.
What's it to you?
Bert, look, truck drivers.
It's a beautiful scene, and we're reacquainted with compassion. The next stop is a filling station inside some small town where they can afford to buy only a gallon of gas. They're approached by a cop, played by Ward Bond, who makes small talk with fellow Oklahomans, but must end with an admonishment not to spend the night.
Where's the best place to get work around here? Yeah. Don't matter what kind, either.
If I seen one of them things, I seen 10,000 of them.
Ain't it no good?
Not here, not now. There was some picking around here about a month ago, but it's all moved south. Hey, what part of Oklahoma are you from, anyhow?
Salisaw.
Salisaw? Well, I come out from Cherokee County myself about 2 years ago.
Cherokee County!
Oh, you
didn't
declare.
Why,
Connie's folks here from Cherokee County.
Well, you don't say. All right, all right. Just don't go into it. What I got to tell you is this. Don't try to park in town tonight. Just go right on out to that camp. If I catch you in town after dark, I'll lock you up.
But what are we going to do?
Well, Pop, that just ain't up to me. I don't mind telling you the guy they ought to lock up is the guy that sent them things out.
That was the law in those days, and vagrancy, squatting, and camping weren't tolerated, a far cry from those living under freeway overpasses, in tents, and on the sidewalks today. I contend neither example is humane, just sane. We'll come back to the role of government inside the film as my third theme of the podcast. The Jodes make it to the California state line and must pass the agricultural checkpoint. The guards want to board and inspect the rig filled with family possessions. Ma Jode pleads for understanding, swearing they're not bringing any fruit into the state, and exclaiming her mother, Grandma Jode, laying across her lap is sick. The inspectors relent and pass them through. Grandma Jode was actually dead. the agricultural inspectors gave the Joads a break. Landowners seeking crop pickers game the system by handing out thousands of handbills, explaining workers wanted at good pay, and lure the weary travelers to their vineyards. They're met by the manager and his goon squad, who point out that more workers than those who are required showed up looking for work. Supply and demand, folks. The wages promised have been lowered, manipulated by the landlords knowingly. Life for migrant workers was difficult. They were paid by the quantity of fruit picked, with earnings averaging only 75 cents to a buck 25 a day. A full day, I might add. There weren't labor laws, minimum wages, or workers' compensation. You get sick, don't work, you don't eat. The Joads hire on and are assigned a shack. You wouldn't let your dog live inside. Ma Joad proudly proclaims,
"We gonna live here, Ma?"
"Why, sure. This won't be so bad once we get her washed out."
"I like the tent better."
"This got a floor. Won't leak when it rains."
The vineyard is gated and patrolled by 10 Star security goons who keep order. Groceries are purchased at the company store at inflated prices. I ask myself, where are the Mexican farm workers? In California, Mexican and others from south of the border pick our fruit and vegetables. It was a lost opportunity by the filmmakers to show the conflicts or cooperation between the Mexican farm workers and the refugee workers. After all, both groups of workers were labeled with derogatory names and treated miserably. What a beautiful storyline to see these two groups support each other and rise against the tyranny of the landowners. Ma Joad prepares a stew with the first beef they've eaten in months.
"Can't send them away. Here, take your plates and go inside. Now look, all you little fellers. You each go and get you a nice flat stick, and I'll put what's left for you, huh? Now get!"
The Joads, like the other workers, have become indentured servants. Carradine's Jim Casey refers to a lantern early on in the movie. I contend he's the moral compass in lighting the way for all to follow. He doesn't want any part of the wage slavery and sets up the beginnings of a union movement just outside the gated ranch. Fonda's Tom Joad joins him. The word red is bandied about as unions were referred by some as commie organizations. The gathering is raided by the goons. Jim Casey's lantern is extinguished for good. And Fonda's Tom Joad takes a beating, but becomes wanted by the law by murdering a goon in self-defense. The Joads can't subsist on the wages and decide to leave for better pickings in Fresno, pun intended. Fonda's Tom Joad doesn't want any part of it. He's a wanted man, but explains in not so many words, he's now going to carry Jim Casey's lantern, fight for workers' rights, and lead the family.
"How am I going to know about you, Tommy? Why, they could kill you, and I'd never know. They could hurt you."
I don't know enough."
"How am I going to know about you, Tommy? Why, they could kill you, and I'd never know. They could hurt you. How am I going to know?"
"Well, maybe it's like Casey says. A fella ain't got a soul of his own, just a little piece of a big soul. The one big soul that belongs to everybody. Then..."
"Then what, Doc?"
"Then it don't matter. I'll be all around in the dark. I'll be everywhere, wherever you can look. Wherever there's a fight so hungry people can eat, I'll be there. Wherever there's a cop beating up a guy, I'll be there. I'll be in the way guys yell when they're mad. I'll be in the way kids laugh when they're hungry and they know supper's ready. And when the people are eating the stuff they raise and living in the houses they build, I'll be there too."
The Joads are told there is a weed patch camp run by the U.S. Department of Agriculture. It's essentially akin to a refugee sanctuary with running water, showers, toilets, regular meals, and the camp is split up into groups, each governed by elected officials. It resembles an American version of a kibbutz. The administrator is a kindly old fellow who proclaims, "We have a dance every Saturday night, and no police can come inside without a warrant." The film neglects to ask the question, why are these refugee camps not scattered throughout the country and found only at the end of the film by the Jodes? The government is portrayed as savior inside the film, and I always found myself skeptical of the kindly old administrator. The Jodes move on to Fresno, and Ma Jode remains the pragmatic, optimistic force.
A woman can change better than a man. A man lives sort of, well, in jerks. Baby's born or somebody dies, and that's a jerk. He gets a farm or loses it, and that's a jerk. With a woman, it's all in one flow like a stream. Little eddies and waterfalls, but the river, it goes right on. A woman looks at it that way.
Well, maybe. Maybe we sure taken a beating.
I know. That's what makes us tough. Rich fellas come up and they die, and their kids ain't no good and they die out. But we keep a coming. We're the people that live. They can't wipe us out, they can't lick us. We'll go on forever, Pa, because we're the people.
I open the podcast with the environmental and weather conditions of today, forcing the movement of people, and in many of these disasters, one can ask the same question, where's the government? The third theme of the podcast is the advocacy of unions, and government will be there to help you out. Well, FDR's New Deal was in the works and would forever change the lives of Americans. Think about Social Security, which wasn't available to the Jodes. My father worked for the WPA, Works Progress Administration, as a tree cutter, which employed an estimated 8.5 million people. The film references and advocates unionization. The history of exploitation of workers, many children, is rampant within U.S. history, and unions raise the standard of living for its members. A good thing. However, did you ever try and join a union? Just saying. Remember the supply and demand of workers and effects upon wages portrayed inside the film. It's necessary to keep many out so many may prosper. Despite the rampant nepotism inside Hollywood, and my holding a recommendation from the senior vice president of post-production from a big studio, stating he wanted to hire me, but telling me I had to get a union card first. I was turned away and scolded by a Hollywood Guild union official. It left a bad taste in my mouth. It wasn't the Writers Guild. At the opening of the podcast, I described indirectly life imitating art. The Grapes of Wrath tells us tragedy is unavoidable, but within the midst of hard times, we must unite as family, find goodness, and unite with our fellow citizens. In light of recent catastrophes, it's up to us as citizens that we demand from our leaders they learn from past tragedies and remain vigilant, always on the ready to come to our aid. I might add, be prepared and don't count on anybody. And as Forrest Gump said,
and that's all I had to say about that.
Till I see you next time, please leave behind a soft footprint, and class is dismissed.
And given how charged the debate is today around migrant workers in this country, a screening of Grapes of Wrath for the Players in Washington might not be the worst idea. You've been listening to the Razor's Ink podcast with Jonathan Farini. Be sure to check out Jonathan's collection of fiction at the Jonathan B. Farini Story Collection at jonathanfarini.com. There you'll find everything from drama to romance, something for every reader, including his thriller short story, The Night Watcher, where old memories become new horror in a small town. That's jonathanfarini.com, Farini with two R's, one N, or drop an email to razorsincpodcast@gmail.com.
I roamed and rambled and I followed my footsteps in the sparkling sands of her diamond deserts. All around me, a voice was a-sounding. This land was made for you and me.